I'm Lynn Cherry. I'm a children's book author and illustrator, and I wrote this book on climate change with Gary Brosh, and we found that the kids were getting really upset learning about climate change, and I'd realized this when I, as a children's book author, going around to schools and conferences and watching kids respond when I told them about the destruction of the rainforest or pollution of rivers. They would just almost curl up and, you know, like try and disappear. And I realized that this wasn't really working to just tell them doom and gloom. And so I started collecting success stories and about kids saving forests, cleaning up rivers. And I found that when I told them the success stories, they would be very excited and they'd want to do something, that it would empower them. So when Gary and I did this, I'm going to go backwards and forwards on this, but when Gary and I did this book, How We Know What We Know About Our Changing Climate, we followed climate scientists all around the world. It was accurate science. I thought for sure, you know, it was written in a third grade reading level. Congress would see this. They'd want to, they would say, oh, it's climate change is real and happening. We better do something. Well, it didn't happen. And when I would show it to kids, they would get upset. And so I realized I had to tell success stories about climate change. So I started this project, Young Voices for the Planet, and was out just going around collecting stories about youth solutions to the climate crisis, because global warming isn't cool. And kids were really upset about their future. This is an academic book. I did a chapter in this book. It's called Education in Times of Environmental Crisis. And we did a chapter in this book about what's called motivated avoidance. There was a study that came out in the Journal of Behavior and Social Psychology, I believe it's called, about how people, when they're confronted with what is seemingly an intractable, troubling problem that they can't do anything about, that they are motivated to avoid hearing about it ever again, and they push it away. And once they're in this state of denial, it's really hard to get them back to hear the science. So this is how the Young Voices for the Project, Young Voices for the Planet project came about, just highlighting, championing these stories of youth success. And the mission of Young Voices for the Planet is to limit the magnitude of climate change and its impacts through empowering youth through positive success stories to take an essential role in informing society and decision makers and catalyzing change. So as these films became more and more out there, I started learning about what other people were doing and heard about our Children's Trust, which is an amazing project where the young people are they're representing themselves as plaintiffs in these cases around the country. And there's going to be a federal case that's going to be tried. Is that October 29th? Yeah, and this is Victoria, who's one of the plaintiffs. And then other stories about kids. These kids got a ban on plastic bags in Santa Monica, the first plastic bag ban in this country. And then that film that I made called Team Marine was shown all around California. And then all these other kids lobbied for a plastic bag ban in California and got a statewide ban on plastic bags. So I hadn't realized that this was so much behind the scenes, but it really was a youth-led campaign to ban plastic bags. And I'm going to just introduce the panelists, and then I'm going to just go back and show you one of these films, and then we're going to go on to the other panelists. And Lou is the director of Our Children's Trust. He is joining us by Skype. So, Victoria... in 3 weeks, Victoria Barrett, here. In 3 weeks, on October 29th, is it 21 young people? Is that right? Yeah. 21 young people are marching into court as plaintiffs in the federal case Juliana versus United States, being brought by Our Children's Trust. Victoria is one of the plaintiffs. She has felt firsthand climate impacts from Hurricane Sandy on her town of White Plains, New York. Here we go. And Tiara, you may have seen Tiara the opening night. She was speaking about her work with Flint. She became deeply involved in the Flint water crisis, speaking publicly and frequently, visiting politicians to pressure them to provide clean water to Flint residents. She created Children for Flint to introduce youth to politics, current issues, and volunteer opportunities, and to provide a platform to amplify their voices. So I'm going to show this Young Voices for the Planet film, and then we're going to hear from Tiara and Vic and Lou, and then we have 20 minutes for questions, because we really wanted to make sure that you all had enough time to get your questions answered. Okay, I'm gonna make this big.
We're really, really close. We've been really close since like kindergarten. Working as a team it gives you much more courage than if you're just working as an individual. If you're alone, it's always scary.
I have these two friends, Mari McBride and Lily Georgopoulos, and I've known them since I was before preschool.
I think what binds us together is our passion for what's going on around us. We're all doers.
So when we were little and we were first hearing about climate change,
it was on the news, it was in the papers, our parents were talking about it.
I just felt despair. It was worse than concern. It was just sadness. I didn't think there was anything anyone could do.
We got older and we realized that the grown-ups weren't doing anything about it. We kind of lost our faith in adults.
If they care about us, they should care about our future, too.
No one is going to protect our future for us, and so we were on our own.
I think the fight against climate change is kind of like the fight of Harry Potter and the Death Eaters.
Harry Potter was born into this problem, just like we were born into this problem. We saw that Harry Potter was brave.
Even though he was a kid, he made a difference.
We kind of saw him as a role model.
When I was watching the Young Voices for the Planet films, I'd never seen kids in action before, and it was really, really amazing. And I realized that there was nothing different between me and the kids on those screens, and I could be doing what they were doing.
We thought, can we do something like this? Is it possible?
So I got really excited, and I got on a notepad, and I started writing. And I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was going to do something. All of a sudden, this idea just popped into my head. Save Tomorrow, that would be the group name.
Here in Lexington, the town laws didn't allow solarization of our town buildings.
We learned that there was a chance for all three of us to come and talk about climate change at the town meeting.
Lily and Mari and I all wrote some statements to try and get them to allow solar panels to go on public buildings.
At first, we were a little bit scared. These are a bunch of grown-ups. They run the world.
To stop climate change, everyone has to pitch in and help. That means all of us right here in Lexington.
We decided to quote Dr. Seuss using a quote from The Lorax. We said it together.
And remember, as Dr. Seuss said, unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing's gonna get better. It's not.
Thank you very much, ladies.
And then the whole town meeting just stands up and starts clapping. Even the moderator was clapping.
All those in favor will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
It kind of hit us. We had helped this article passed unanimously.
It is unanimous, the motion carries.
We literally just skipped out of the town hall.
We had helped to get solar panels on all the town buildings. We weren't just helpless little girls.
We have more power than we'd ever imagined in our wildest dreams.
After that, it was like, well, we did that, what can we do now?
we found out that they were planning to tear down part of our forest right next to Alice's house.
It's so quiet and peaceful out there. All you can hear is, like, birds and wind.
Makes you feel really free.
It's just, like, a whole separate world.
We have forts back there. We have owls back there that we know. We know where all the animals live. We love those forests. And it was devastating to think that they could tear down all those trees without even thinking about it. We immediately knew that we weren't gonna let this happen. We made a petition to save our woods.
To whom it may concern, we are the kids of Lexington, and we have too many amazing memories of Mountain Road without anyone disturbing the beautiful forest there.
And then we went around to the whole cafeteria asking people, do you want to sign this? Then we turned it in. And I think that they were really just overwhelmed. A bunch of school children all fighting for this little lot of woods behind their houses. This is like where they play. And I'm pretty sure they hadn't even realized that.
One of the reasons why people listen to kids is because we're trying to do what's right.
Whereas some adults, they're doing it for the money.
But they realized how much this plot of land meant to all of us, and I think that really helped them make their decision. They kept the woods there, and the woods are still there today.
We saved the woods from there to beyond my house over there.
Yeah.
It's more like a corridor in between two big woods.
Yeah,
a passageway for the animals.
We realized, wait, we have a new school. We can put solar panels on our new school, reducing CO2 emissions and really doing something about climate change. Our whole school will be helping save the world.
We need to go out there and take a risk to make a difference.
We're taking it into our hands now.
Seeing that we do have power and that we can make a change in the world, it's really inspiring. It really changes you. And I think it's just gonna grow from here. So find your team, find your passion, find your power. We could power our whole town on clean solar energy.
Sorry, okay.
Sorry. I'll make sure you got it.
Okay. All right. So, let's hear from Victoria.
Was there any way for me to...
Once you get started, I'll get you going in a second.
Yeah, totally. Okay. All right, so...
Hello, my name is Victoria Barrett. You could call me Vic. I'm from New York. I'm currently a sophomore, started my sophomore year at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm 19 years old, and I'm a youth environmental and social activist who's been fighting on the forefront of the climate justice movement for about 4 years now. I'm currently a plaintiff on a lawsuit, as discussed, with 20 other young people suing the U.S. federal government for failing to protect my right to life, liberty, and property by taking direct action to perpetuate the global climate crisis.
I'm asking you guys to switch seats just so I can get you plugged.
Yeah, sure. Sorry. Thank you.
Let's just make sure it works.
Yeah. I'll just say one little thing while Vic is getting set up, that one of the things I really hope that we could be writing more about as journalists is about the psychology and the social science of climate communication, like how it is, because when we started giving information out about climate change and a lot of other environmental issues, we really were just talking about the science and really ignoring the psychology. So
it's an old computer.
I'd love to talk to you more about that afterwards. how can we frame these stories more in terms of the effect of these really doom and gloom issues on people, but then how can we also tell, like yesterday was a solutions panel, which was really nice. How can we also frame it in terms of like this starting with the solutions so you can hear the science?
I could just sit here too. Okay. All right, so who needs visuals? It's unnecessary.
Sorry.
I started out doing activism by working at a nonprofit called Global Kids in New York, and I learned about human rights and social justice in the context of climate change. And I learned about how New York City climate change impacts some people more than others, disproportionately people living in low-income housing, which is typically built in areas more susceptible to natural disaster. So when I realized that legislative routes don't always work, I was excited to join the lawsuit and tackle climate change through the judicial branch and presenting cold, hard facts to the people who had been ignoring me for so long. So after joining the lawsuit, I went to COP21 in Paris, and I met with world leaders that represented countries that were most impacted, and I learned about how our actions here impact life abroad. And I was even more determined to throw myself into action and throw myself into advocacy. And I took my involvement further by working with the United Nations and addressing the General Assembly about why young people need to be included in the implementation of the Sustainable Development Goals. So a lot of these opportunities that I got with the United Nations, with going to COP, stemmed through the action that I was taking with the federal government and suing the federal government. The lawsuit is supported and facilitated through a nonprofit organization known as Our Children's Trust, whose main mission is to lead a game-changing, youth-driven global climate recovery campaign by securing the legal right to a healthy atmosphere and stable climate. So 21 young people are suing the U.S. federal government for failure to protect our future from climate change and violating our constitutional rights to life, liberty, and property. The U.S. federal government has known since 1965 that climate change was potentially disastrous. We're challenging all of the direct actions taken by the federal government, which allow and promote greenhouse gas emissions at unsafe levels, and we're demanding a national plan to reduce atmospheric carbon dioxide. We've received support from people all over the world, ranging in areas of expertise, everyone from world-renowned climate scientist James Hansen, who is signed on as a plaintiff and a protector of future generations on the lawsuit, and everyone to the Catholic Church itself. The Catholic Church signed an amicus briefing in support of our case. People have been really supporting us, supplying key evidence and expertise, and in any way they can, basically. We've gone through a lot of ups and downs in the case. It's been tried to be stopped by the federal government multiple times in multiple different ways, sensical and nonsensical. We have gotten good news, though. We've gotten a lot of precedent-setting decisions coming out of this case. So for the first time in history, a U.S. federal judge expressed, quote, "No doubt that the right to a system capable of sustaining human life is fundamental to a free and ordered society. Just as marriage is the, quote, foundation of the family, a stable climate system is quite literally the foundation of society, without which there would be neither civilization nor progress." So that was like an amazing decision to hear out of a federal judge, mm-hmm. especially in support for young people who are trying to hold their government accountable to them. So basically, putting this all into context is why I joined the lawsuit, what this means to me as a young person. Before the lawsuit, I was a young activist, having to leave a lot of voicemails at council members' offices and emails in state senators' inboxes and dropping in on city council members' Halloween parties. And finally, I was being given the opportunity to put the climate science right in front of the decision maker's line of view. I was being given the opportunity to put cold, hard facts in front of the U.S. federal government. I joined the lawsuit because I'm seeing in my work that youth don't have a voice in our government, and we're just letting people meant to represent us make decisions about our future, but with their interests most deeply in mind. So there's no question that climate change is going to impact future generations. People our age are doing things like suing the government and starting organizations because we're existing in a world that's opposed to our posterity and to our future. Technologically and socially we advance, but what does that mean when people in decision-making power are taking larger actions that put our entire future at risk. Our commitment to fossil fuel infrastructure and the depletion of non-renewable resources for only material gain has time and time proven again to be directly working against progress and to be directly working against the future. The connection between climate change and future generations is something that needs to be highlighted as much as possible. We can talk about carbon taxes and sustainable infrastructure all we want, but the question is, are we as young people being given the tools we need to accomplish these things if the current systems of power can't? Are we even being given a fair chance to make a difference in the world that's going to be ours? My kids may not see the same island of Manhattan that I get to, and my grandkids too. And if anything, this is a huge impact that future generations are going. This huge impact that future generations are going to feel should be the largest motivator for stopping climate change. I want future generations to know that we did absolutely everything we could to make sure that we ensured them a sustainable and fair future. The moral ramifications of climate change are many, and anything that I say here today can only be cursory, but the general consensus of most climate experts is that the safe level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is 350 parts per million. In the year I was born, 1999, 19 years ago, the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere was already at 370 parts per million. I was literally born into a world that wasn't capable of sustaining my life. There's clear injustice in this, and we have to see that climate change disproportionately affects the people who contribute the least to the issue. We have to do our parts to make sure that we keep the most vulnerable people safe, and people in position of power make policies that are just. Young people, we're going to have to grow and adapt to a world unlike any other. That's the only way we'll be able to lead it. We're going to have to steer a world that may have a different map due to sea level rise. Not only does climate change disproportionately impact youth, but we see that on a global scale. Nations in the midst of their development are being devastated by climate change and the effects of carbon emissions. These countries are also countries with some of the least emissions. These are things that maybe I don't need to tell any of you, but that's because a lot of us are here in a position of privilege. We know what's happening, and we know what we need to do to stop it, but a lot of the people in nations in most imminent danger don't possess the same access to that information, and who is to say that they should even have to? Countries like ours are the ones perpetuating this violence against their countries. Every single decision that I make as an activist and as a young person isn't only about the 8 million people living in New York City, and it's not just about the 20 million people living in my state, and it's not just about the 350 million people living in this country. It's about the world, and it's about the Maldives and Bangladesh and countries that face evacuation due to sea level rise. And it's for where my family's from, in Honduras, where I see sea level rise happening steps away from my home. And you don't even have to go far to see that injustice. Right here in the city that we're sitting in, low-income minorities and children have been poisoned by a decision that prioritized profit over posterity and over people and over existing and over living. Climate change is an issue of justice. It's an issue of equality. People in the communities like this are literally drowning under the burden and the emissions of people in power and of industrialized countries like ours, and holding them under when we should be helping them with a life preserver. When examining these issues deeply, and when really listening to the stories of the people who every day have their lives directly impacted by climate change, which I'm also grateful that we get to do here, especially the stories coming out of this community, it becomes even more clear that climate change is an issue of morality in the same way that poverty, refugees, human rights violations are. Climate change directly contributes to many of these issues, so by fighting climate change, we're also combating other global injustices. I promise I'm almost done. We're seeing a growing movement of young people, and it's because if there's one thing that I could say with confidence, it's that young people are ready to take control of our future. Our generation is about protecting ourselves from the negligence of those in power when it comes to issues pertaining to youth. It's about breaking down borders. It's about being radical together. We don't want any more of the same, and we don't want any more of the status quo, because we've seen where it's gotten us, and we're not really feeling it. We're prepared to be unapologetically unconventional if it means mitigating the issues that we see laying in front of us. We're tasked with facing a different Earth, But most young people know what it means to be different. We're unlike any generation before us. We're the most diverse, we're the most educated, and have more access to information compared to generations before us. Young people don't care about what color your skin is or who you love or what you believe in because we understand that those social divisions are constructs. And what we care about is if people have good ideas, good innovation. We care if people have compassion. And these ideals and this positive disposition that our generation maintains despite the world we're living in is why I know that we're going to be okay. We're ready to take control of what's ours, and I think that one day people will be shocked by the difference in what past generations expected us to be and who we actually are. We're not giving up, and we haven't given up, and we're only becoming stronger. Every day new people are joining the movement. We see the seas rising around us, and we've determined that in order to save this planet, we could only rise with them. I truly believe that young people especially have the ability to change minds and as a result change the world. It's time for radical change and it's time for radical love. And what sets us apart is also what sets us up for change. Our future is our choice. So thank you.
Thank you. Sorry to have saddled you with this world. So we're going to get a chance to hear from Lou after we're going to hear from Tiara, and a lot of new people have come in, so I'm just going to reintroduce Tiara. Tiara Darasol became deeply involved in the Flint water crisis, speaking publicly and frequently visiting the politicians to pressure them to provide clean water for Flint residents. She created Children for Flint to introduce youth to politics, current issues, and volunteer opportunities, and to provide a platform to amplify their voices. And I'm really thrilled that you're joining us today so we can hear about has happened here in this city where we're having our conference from a native and who's lived through this water crisis. Thank you for coming.
You're welcome. Well, hi, my name is Tiara Darasol. I'm a youth social and political advocate. I have been doing this for around 3 years, and I'm 13, by the way. This means a lot to me because when the Flint water crisis went public, I was 9 years old. I was young at the time. I didn't even understand what was going on. Now, I really did think that this wouldn't affect me too much because I do stay in Flushing. But my grandmother lives on the north side of Flint, and I go to her house every day to be babysat and to take care of her because she's elderly, and I feel like I should help her. So I take baths every day after school at her house, at least I did. And one day I got rashes across my arms and my back. Now, I thought, and my mom thought, that it was eczema, which I've had bad when I was little, but I haven't had an outbreak in a while, so we thought that I was having an outbreak, and I wasn't. I went to get tested, but it came out inconclusive, so I still, to this day, don't know if this is going to affect my kids and my grandkids. It only stays in your blood for 30 days. But it stays in your body for life. And I think it's important for us to talk about this because it was public at first, but now the media has stopped talking about it. And to be quite frank, some people think that it's over, but it's not. We deal with this every day. Our water is still not clean. We can't drink it. And it's not just lead in the water. It's Legionnaires, waterborne bacteria, sewage. It's a lot of horrible stuff in the water that nobody talks about. And I feel like it should be heard. We should know what's in our water. We should know and have a choice on if they're going to switch it or not. We wasn't aware that they were going to change the water until, you know, after it changed and we turned on our water and it was brown. And I feel like we should hold our elected officials accountable for what they've done. I also feel like us young people have a voice, and it needs to be heard. the reason why I created Children for Flint is because I feel like kids don't have the option to speak. Most people just ignore us because they think, well, they don't know what they're talking about. We deal with the same water that some of you adults deal with now. I don't personally know who's from Flint in this room, but some people might be. And kids are dealing with the same water just like the adults. We're dealing with the same issues and same things as the adults are. And I feel like we should be able to speak up. We should be able to tell you what we believe in and hold them accountable. I also believe that Flint is more than just a water crisis. We shouldn't just talk about all the bad things that's happened. We should talk about the improvements and the people at Flint. How we're trying to become a community and not just what the elected officials have done. I believe that, yes, fear is contagious and it spreads like a virus, but so is hope. We can spread hope. We can shine a light onto people that think that it's over and that they have no voice. We could teach people that they have a voice. They can express how they feel. They can tell people what's going on. I believe that this isn't just a Flint issue. People all across this nation are dealing with unclean water to this day. As much technology as we have, I don't think that we should. We're surrounded by lakes, literally surrounded, but yet we still don't have clean water. There are so many other places we could switch it to, but we don't. And I believe that we should talk about it and bring it more known. I feel like journalists and people who write stories and news and the media should tell people what's going on, because a lot of people that don't live in Flint or don't live in the places that have water crisis right now might not even know that it's going on. This has happened before in Washington, D.C. in 2002. Why does it continue to repeat itself? It shouldn't. We should have learned from the first mistake. But instead, we get new elected officials and it continues to happen and no one is held accountable. But though many stuff that we're going through, we will prevail. We will get through this. We will all be a community once this is over. We just have to speak up for ourselves. Adults and children, we should all work together despite your age. It shouldn't just be adults. If you understand what's going on, the same thing is happening to them. We should all be one happy community and speak up for ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. This for us, you know, we're here visiting, and here we are. We're having filters on our water, and we're just here for a week, and we're worried about drinking the Flint water. And to think that this was your life and has been your life for
four years.
Oh God, it's criminal. Yeah, I saw the Michael Moore movie and about the politics of all this, and I'm really hoping that we as journalists can shine a much stronger light on this Flint issue and really get it resolved. And I love the idea that we could have, that the children can be this big force thanks to you and your organizing. Can you just tell them about the water, bringing the water from Florida?
Yes. When I was 11, I decided that many politicians have already just giving up and organizations giving water. So I contacted people from Florida, and I got 50,000 bottled waters plus clothes of all sizes from newborn to 3XL and diapers and formula, and drove it here to Flint, and I publicized this so everyone could get free clean water, clothes, and formula and things for their family because none of it's being provided.
Thank you. So we're going to have time for questions after Lou. Is Lou there?
Yep, he's right behind you.
Right. Okay.
Hey, Lou, can you give us a test so we can hear you?
I'm just going to introduce Lou. Lou Helmuth is the Deputy Director of Our Children's Trust.
Ooh, try again.
Can you hear me?
Can
you hear me?
Yeah.
Gotcha, but Lynn's going to introduce you really quick.
Yeah, I'm introducing you, Lou.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
He's going to have a hard time hearing you from there, so you know.
Okay. Lou Helmuth is the Deputy Director of Our Children's Trust. He works to secure the legal right of children to live in a stable climate with a healthy atmosphere for present and future generations. As a lawyer, he represented youth with disabilities from all around the country, tried multiple cases in the U.S. District Courts, and argued cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals. And Lou's going to tell us about the trust doctrine, like what the legal basis is of this case. It's very interesting case law and whatever else he chooses to talk about. So go ahead, Lou.
Go ahead, you're up.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Good morning, and thank you, Lynn. I'm sorry I did not hear the introduction very well at all, but I won't go into any detail about myself. I'm going to try and share my screen with you right now, Kevin.
We see it.
You do see it?
Yes, we have the back end of your PowerPoint.
Yeah, okay. Let me just get this going.
It's
not working. Do you see the whole screen or do you see all of my slides?
All your slides.
Okay, bear with me for one moment, please.
It looks big enough. There might be a way. That's in another session where they trump the one on the right.
Just use that arrow over there under the 113.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm just going to go for it, and I apologize for this, but good morning, everyone. I am Lou Helmuth, the Deputy Director at Our Children's Trust, and I just want to say thank you so much to Lynn for this invitation, but also more importantly to the young activists in the room. Tiara and Vic, you are truly leading this effort and this campaign. Your voices are being heard because you are raising them. Thank you for everything that you are doing. Tiara, you are going to secure clean water for everyone in Flint and beyond. And Vic, your voice, as you know, is being heard around the world as well on the subject of the global climate crisis. Thank you both and all of your compatriots for everything that you are doing to save our world. So I'm the Deputy Director at Our Children's Trust. This is me on the screen here. And there you are, Vic. See, on this day, we happen to be right next to each other. This is us standing outside the federal courthouse in Eugene, Oregon, during one of the many hearings that have been going on in Giuliani v. U.S. I am going to take just a few minutes to dig into some of the nuts and bolts of this groundbreaking legal action that Vic and her 21 co-plaintiffs have brought in the United States District Court for the District of Oregon. These are the 21 young people who have brought this lawsuit. There's Vic front and center, as well her 21 or her 20 co-plaintiffs. The plaintiffs range in age now from Levi, who is 10, to Kelsey Giuliana, who is the lead plaintiff, named plaintiff in the case, who is now 22. When this action was first brought against the United States government, it was first brought against President Obama and the rest of the most cabinet agencies. Levi was 7 years old when he brought this lawsuit. The lawsuit is, in fact, now against nearly the entire federal government. As you can see, the defendants in the case that these young people have brought to court are President Trump, the Office of the President, the Department of Energy, the Department of Interior, Department of Transportation, Agriculture, Commerce, Defense, State, and the EPA. This is a huge case with huge consequences. As Vic mentioned, the legal basis for the case is that the aggregate actions, the affirmative steps that the United States government has taken over the past 50 and year more years, over the last 50 and more years, violate the public trust doctrine as well as constitutional principles. The public trust doctrine is an ancient legal principle that essentially says that the government has the fiduciary duty to preserve essential natural resources for all present and future generations. Today, the government must ensure that we don't utilize all of those essential natural resources for our present benefit without regard to preserving them for the benefit of generations to come. So we can't drink all the water, we can't poison the water, we need to make sure that the water is healthy and is available for us today and into the future. We are applying that public trust doctrine for the first time to the atmosphere. We are saying that the atmosphere is an essential natural resource. Without a healthy atmosphere, we will suffer egregious climate crises and consequences. And so we have to preserve it today in order that we have the benefits of it. We reduce today's climate crisis, but we ensure that, as Vic said, her children and grandchildren don't experience a Manhattan that is underwater. And so to preserve the health of the atmosphere, as Vic mentioned, what we need to do is draw down carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to below 350 parts per million by the year 2100. The young people are also arguing that the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution is being violated because these young people's rights to life, liberty, and property are being denied them by virtue of these aggregate actions that the government has taken for the last 50 years to perpetuate the fossil fuel infrastructure, which provides us with all of the carbon pollution that is denigrating the health of our atmosphere. And that is threatening the personal safety and life of young people and future generations. As well, the Fifth Amendment guarantees that every citizen is entitled to equal protections of the law. Well, in this case, by virtue of the federal government's affirmative actions, young people are clearly being discounted and treated differently than, for instance, people of my generation. Vic said in her opening remarks that she's concerned about what's going to happen relative to her children and her grandchildren's experiences on Manhattan. Will there be a place for them actually to live? That's not any sort of concern that I considered as a 19-year-old person on this planet. So young people are being not only shouldered with the consequences of this crisis, their present circumstances are being impacted by this crisis. They are experiencing floods and asthmatic conditions and mental health issues, all kinds of current issues today as a result of the affirmative actions of the federal government. What are the young people seeking? Well, they're seeking a judicial declaration that the aggregate actions of the government did in fact violate those constitutional and public trust rights. And they're also requesting that the court order that the United States government prepare and implement a science-based climate recovery plan that will phase out fossil fuel emissions and also draw down atmospheric CO2 to below 350 parts per million by the year 2100. This is a really significant component of this case. The courts can't tell the federal government exactly what they must do. However, the court can tell the federal government that they have to ensure that a minimum floor of constitutional protection is guaranteed these young people, and that minimum floor is an atmospheric condition that is safe, 350 parts per million by the year 2100, that will be proven with scientific climate evidence in court, and that to keep these young people safe, we've got to reach that amount. So government, do whatever it is that you need to do to accomplish that. And there are myriad options for the government to choose. There are fuel efficiency standards, building efficiency standards, transportation standards, agricultural standards, and a recipe of all of those together can meet this 350 parts per million by 2100 standard. As Vic mentioned, the young people have had multiple successes in this case, most significantly on November 10th, 2016, nearly 2 years ago and 2 days after the election of Donald Trump, the court made the historic finding that the United States Constitution protects the right to a climate system capable of sustaining human life. That's an incredible new constitutional right that this court has already found in Vic's case to exist, and we are now attempting to get to trial to prove that that constitutional right has been violated. The federal government is fighting this case coming to trial tooth and nail. Without belaboring this point, the federal government has taken very, very extraordinary and rare steps to try to undo that very historic ruling of the federal court. They have twice taken this case to the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit on a very unusual procedural legal tool called a petition for writ of mandamus. They did it once. They did it twice. The young people have won both times. The government, in losing both of those efforts, took a dramatic step before trial to take this case to the Supreme Court, to ask the Supreme Court before trial to stop this case from happening. The Supreme Court denied their effort to do so on July 30th. And this case is now set to go to trial 3 weeks from this coming Monday on October 29th. In 3 weeks, these young people will stand before the United States District Court and start a 10 to 12 week trial that will put climate science on trial and the federal government's actions that have caused the climate crisis. Late yesterday, we learned that the federal government is taking another step right now. They have just yesterday filed another motion to postpone this case. And we will see how that unfolds. That motion was filed with the United States District Court that has already scheduled this case to begin on October 29th to postpone the case indefinitely while, believe it or not, the United States government takes another petition for writ of mandamus to the Ninth Circuit and another application for stay unless the district court postpones this case. So the government does not want this case to come to trial. The young people are set and ready to take this case to trial in 3 weeks in Eugene, Oregon, and we are optimistic and confident that the young people will win because they have so much in support. Vic mentioned the Catholic Church and the numerous amici that have come in support of this case. There are Nobel Prize winning experts who are dedicating their time to come and testify on behalf of the young people, and we're looking forward to going to trial in this case. I thank you very much. More than anything, I thank Tiara and Vic for your incredible advocacy, and thanks for this opportunity.
So now it's, I guess, up to us to shine a light on what's going on here, and especially the government's trying to impede the moving forward of this case. So I'm so glad that we're able to have this panel here at SEJ. We're right on time. We have 20 minutes for questions, and I really wanted to have plenty of time for interaction so you could really get to know Tiara and Vic, and if you have questions also for Lou. That was an amazing overview of the case, Lou. Thank you. So are there questions?
That's for Vic. So you're 19 now.
Yes.
And I'm Nancy Castaldo, and I'm also from New York. And I'm anxious to hear a little bit more about your childhood and what brought you to be such an activist. When you started.
Yes.
I have to repeat the question. So you are Nancy Castaldo. You're an SEJ member. And she asked Vic, what was her childhood like? And so how was it that you were essentially, how did you become this wonderful activist that you are today?
I grew up in a more rural part of New York, in Walk Hill, New York, originally, 98% white, and that's where I spent the first 13 years of my life, and I learned a lot about being different and being forgiving. in that time. And I think that contributed a lot to my activism. And also just growing up with a single Afro-Latinx mother who always made sure I knew as much about my culture as I could, and getting to go to Honduras every year and see the actual realities of what life was like there, in deep contrast to like my very rural suburban life in White Plains or Walk Hill, just made me think a lot about the world. And once I got to high school and once I got to New York City and started going to school there, and I was able to access all these resources to actually like harness a lot of the thoughts that I'd been having for a while and like learn about direction, what direction I want to like put that energy into, that definitely led me there.
Thank you. And can you identify yourself and say, it's SCJ members can ask questions first, right? So make sure you're an SCJ member. So I'm sorry, what's your name and are you an SCJ member? Oh, okay. So okay. All right. Okay, great question. I'm going to repeat it. So Ishika asked both the panelists, how was it, how does it feel to actually as a young person have an impact on, in your case, Tara Flint, and in your case, Vic, the world?
I want to add that Tara's actions in Flint are contributing to, you know, like the general well-being of the world. I don't want to take away or discredit any of her actions here. As just want to say, but you can answer first, Elsa.
Thank you for that question. That was a nice question. It feels really nice. I'm not even gonna lie. Like to know that you're young and have power, because I started when I was around 9, going on 10. It's really nice to know that you have power to change things, because when I was younger, I did not think I had a voice, nor did I think my voice mattered. And I had a lot of things to say, but I normally didn't say it because I didn't think my voice would matter. And to know that my voice does matter made me feel really awesome. And it just makes me feel so much better that I'm able to get my community clean water and make sure this doesn't happen to other communities, and to help youth learn that they can have a voice. So thank you. Don't forget, if you feel anything about anything, you have a voice and you can speak up about it and you can tell anybody how you feel. Don't forget that. Thank you.
Yeah. I would say that it definitely is a really amazing feeling when you get to make a difference in your community, especially as a young person. That's a feeling that I've gotten, that I've been lucky enough to experience since I've been 14 in like different ways, whether it's like speaking at a city council meeting or speaking to my peers. Like, it always feels great. I think for me, the next thing that would feel even better is getting to see that in the rest of my peers and like getting to see that in their lives and make them feel good too.
I'm wearing two hats here. Okay.
I'm Christy George. I'm a freelancer from Oregon, so I'm interested in the case. And I have a question for Lou. Is the last-minute attempt by the federal government to postpone the trial, in, is that going to end up in the Supreme Court? And is it related to Kavanaugh?
thanks. Very much. It likely will end in the Supreme Court, but we don't know that yet. So yesterday they filed a motion to stay the case, to postpone the case at the United States District Court. They told the United States District Court that if the United States District Court does not postpone the case quickly, early next week they will file a petition for writ of mandamus in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and also an application for stay with the United States Supreme Court in the event the Ninth Circuit doesn't stay the case. So right now they've just asked the United States District Court to stay the case. If the court doesn't act or doesn't stay the case quickly, early next week they will file both with the Ninth Circuit and with the Supreme Court. That's what they've told us to do. I don't think it does relate at all to the potential confirmation of Justice Kavanaugh, or Judge Kavanaugh. However, things will unfold quickly in the next few days. Our press release is on our website at www.ourchildrenstrust.org. Under press, you can see that last night's press release with some more detail if that's helpful to you.
So Cassandra Profita, and asking Vic, what's your feeling about this upcoming trial and what the judge is going to be?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trial. I'm also scared and nervous. I have to testify. I got deposed a few weeks ago. I've never done that. I have to testify, which I've also never done. So it's nerve-wracking, but it's also really exciting because I'm pretty confident in our case and our correctness. I feel like we really do have the moral high ground here also, so it's like, I don't know. I get to go in smiling because, like, I know I'm doing the right thing. I don't know how the DOJ lawyers are going to feel. I'm not going to be there the whole time because it's 10 to 12 weeks and I'm in my first semester of sophomore year. But I'm going to be there for the first day of trial and I'm going to be there when I have to testify. So a little back and forth. And in terms of the way that the government is responding to the case, I'm not shocked. I think that there's a lot of lack of government accountability, especially in this administration, especially when you're asking them to put facts that they hid in the first place in front of their face. I understand the hesitancy. The justice system is made to make sure that things happen the way that they're supposed to. And even if the government keeps going back to the justice system and saying that, you know, this isn't fair, this isn't right, if the right people are making the decisions, they know that this case needs to go to trial, and there's no reason that it shouldn't.
So this is Rachel Rohr. She's a Knight Fellow and
with the Ground Truth Project,
and she's asking both the panelists what they
advice for other kids.
That's good.
Whatever you want.
Okay, my advice for other teenagers and kids is, number one, to speak up for themselves. And I'm not going to lie, it's going to be hard at first and very nerve-wracking, because when I first spoke in front of a crowd, I was very scared. Honestly, I thought they wouldn't like me. So it's going to be hard at first, but once you start, you'll get the hang of it. It'll become easier. I also believe that, you know, talking to other kids and other teenagers will definitely help. Because from personal experience, it's not as easy to learn from adults as it is to learn from kids or someone your age. So if you're talking to other people your age, they're probably going to understand it better. Because, you know, y'all speak certain ways, or y'all have, you know, just it'll be a lot easier. Also, I think it'll probably help people learn if they let us speak and let us have a voice, and that we could get people to have a big group. Because as you can see from all the videos and stuff, when you get a group of children or teenagers or of all ages, it helps for them to listen, because they think they can shut down one person, but they can't shut down 50.
I would say a lot of my advice would probably be it's going to be scary at first, depending on what you want to do, depending on what resources you want to access or who you want to talk to. But it's definitely well worth it. And also that right now there's a lot of oversaturation, or a lot of young people are seeing on their news feeds, on their social media feeds, like all these other young people doing all these crazy things. And I think it's very easy to get trapped and like, everyone else is doing something. My Instagram feed doesn't look like, you know, I'm in some place feeding children or something like that, you know, and it's very easy to compare yourself to other people. But I think being comfortable in your own activism and being comfortable in what you care about and not feeling too pressured by what other people are interested in or what other people are latching onto, just being very comfortable in yourself and your actions and like what that means to you. And even if you're an artist, then maybe your action isn't going to go lobby, but your action is to go chalk outside of your city council building, then that's being an activist, and that's taking action, and that's incredibly important and really necessary to the movement. So I would definitely say young people need to make sure not to let what they're doing be demeaned by what other people are doing, because every action is important.
I just wanted to add to that, because in the work that I'm doing with the Young Voices for the Planet films, they're actually based in social psychology, and especially the work of social psychologist Albert Bandura, who is the most widely quoted psychologist in the world, the most widely quoted psychologist of all time after Piaget, Freud, and B.F. Skinner. He's the one who coined the term self-efficacy, which is the ability, is your ability to believe in your own ability to make a difference. And he's, for 70 years, studied how is it that young people, or actually anybody, can develop self-efficacy. And one of the things, is like what Tiara was saying, is that it's social modeling, seeing what other kids are doing. And then he also found that young people are much more likely to do something if they see their peers doing it. So with any kind of issue, if we realize the power of the youth voice and getting young people involved, I mean, the key really is getting other young people involved, because they're going to be listening to their peers. What's your name?
Oh, I'm Aaron Scott. I'm with Oregon Public Broadcasting.
Okay. Aaron Scott from Oregon Public Broadcasting, and he asked me for some tips about how do I frame these stories of young people and interest the media in them. And actually, I found coming at it from looking at how do you create wide social change, and the power of the youth voice, and why is the youth voice so powerful, is probably the most effective way of writing about young people in the media. My experience came from first. I was trying to save some land, and in Western Maryland, and we were failing. It's like 7 years failing, until these young people learned about the story. Wrote letters to, it was an Episcopal church that was trying to sell this piece of conservation land. And then they got on Sunday Morning News with Charles Osgood. We couldn't, you know, they got national media attention. And those letters were read, and the next week the church decided to sell the land to the Trust for Public Land. So that was my initiation into, whoa, the power of these young people. And so I find that the reason it's that they're so effective is because a lot of adults, they think of these problems as into the, being way in the future, so they don't really relate to them. But the young people are bringing the future into the present. They're bringing them into the future, into the room. And so these stories where you're weaving in the psychology of why the youth voice is so powerful, I think that that's a whole new open area that I haven't really seen a lot about. The social psychology, especially if you want to look at Albert Bandura's work, tying it into that, how young voices have the incredible power that they have, and they have a moral high ground. You know, they're talking from like the kids in the movie. It's not about money. It's about protecting life on Earth, protecting their future and the future of all future to come. So, I think that those are very powerful reasons that the media can and should even more so pick up these youth stories.
I'm Shane Gates from Olympia, Washington. My blog is called Little Hollywood, and I interviewed Ollie Piper a few months ago for my blog. So, a question I have is, how were you all approached to take part with this case? What was your reaction, or how did that come about? And
then
I'm wondering how this can be replicated to new cases that may arise, like
Tiara. Mm. Tell me your name again.
Janine Gates.
Janine
Gates
from
Little Hollywood.
Little Hollywood blog. And she was asking how we might be able to replicate this.
And how these children were chosen in the first place.
Oh, yeah, and how the plaintiffs in the case were chosen, and how the lessons from the Our Children's Trust lawsuit might convey to the youth in Flint.
Yeah, so everyone, all the plaintiffs were already working in their own communities on their own separate issues, working against their harms, basically. I was doing a lot of work in New York, specifically around climate education in New York City public schools and trying to mandate public education in New York City public schools, K-12. And I was working on that my freshman year and my sophomore year of high school. And I was working with the Alliance for Climate Education. I was working with Global Kids. I was going every day after school trying to work on this campaign. And Our Children's Trust was a partner organization with the Alliance for Climate Education. In my case, in everyone's case, it was a little different. And I was working with the Alliance for Climate Education, and they asked me if I was interested in learning more about Our Children's Trust and just hearing what they had to say about judicial ways of going about combating climate change as opposed to what we were doing, just for like an initial like conversation, just because I had expressed frustration with the legislative route that we were taking. And I talked to somebody from Our Children's Trust on the phone pretty briefly, like maybe 20 minutes, just going through like what their plans were, like what they were talking about doing. And they asked me if that was something that I'd be interested in going into the judicial branch of government to take action. And I was like, yeah, for sure. Like, how? And they're like, we're going to sue the federal government. And I said, okay. And that's how I got involved. My mom had to sign on as a guardian. But yeah, that's how I got involved. Yeah. And I think we're out of, we have 2 minutes?
We have 2 minutes. So do you want to take a minute, and then we should let Lou makes a closing statement too.
Oh,
sorry to shortchange you.
It's fine. Well, to be honest, I think that the way that her case can help the kids of Flint, or my organization that I'm starting, Kids for Flint, I think that that would help us, because it'll teach us that, you know, you do have a voice, and if, you know, you use it enough, it definitely can make an impact on the world and people's lives. And the way that I got started was, you know, I just went to a meeting one time, and it was in Kalamazoo, and I just went because I thought, you know, I mean, what's the harm in just going to one meeting? It was, I thought it wasn't going to be that bad. And, you know, actually kind of liked it because of the way they made it. They didn't make it like where it was all boring. You know, we got to, like, we got to do stuff and make phone calls and, like, learn about stuff. So I kind of liked it. So I started volunteering for them after school like she did. Just start going to all their meetings and, you know, start talking to people. And then they asked me, you know, if I wanted to actually volunteer for them and just not show up at the meetings. So I was like, yeah, of course. And I started volunteering. And then, you know, after a while, I started to make Children for Flint from the ages of 8 to 21 so that they could learn how I learned in a fun way and learn how to vote and learn about policy and procedure and, you know, all that important stuff. And so after a while, you know, I started speaking to Congress. I started going to a whole bunch of meetings. I started going to conferences. Then I started getting business cards. And, you know, it all worked out for the best, you know. I've helped laws pass and, you know, honestly, I've changed a lot that I can. So I think that her case would help us understand that, you know, you can't take them to court for the stuff they did, you know.
So. Thank you so much. I have strict orders that we had to be out of here by noon. I hope that you'll want to interview Tiara and Vic, and Lou said that you can get in touch with him, and he'll be make himself available to you. So thank you very much for coming. I think this was a great panel. Thank you so much.